I'm David Reese. Let's do this.
Comedian, writer, and artisanal pencil sharpening entrepreneur David Reese is a Beacon, New York resident, and the second season of his TV show, Going Deep with David Reese, will premiere on the Esquire Network this Wednesday at 10 p.m.
This is a how-to show about things you think you know how to do, because simple things are more complex than they seem.
The first season of Going Deep with David Reese taught how to make an ice cube, tie your shoes, dig a hole, flip a coin, swat a fly, open a door, throw a paper airplane, light a match, climb a tree, and shake hands. This season will bring us to the wild worlds, and I use that phrase not sarcastically, of how to do the dishes, make toast, take a nap, sign your name, eavesdrop, get punched, and pet a dog.
A long time ago, a man named Sun Tzu said, "Know your enemy."
So I figured, let me get to know the dog.
These dogs are totally dead.
Yes.
And we know that because...
they're skeletons.
Got it.
David Reese, welcome back to the roundtable.
Thank you for having me back.
So I love this show, as I've had the opportunity to tell you a few times, and I'm not going to pretend that I'm journalistically ambivalent about it. I love it.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Of course. So do you want to tell me about how the show moved from National Geographic Channel to Esquire Network, or is that not very interesting?
It's interesting. I don't know how much detail I'm supposed to get into. Let's just say I'm going to go into politician mode.
Okay.
We were very grateful for the support of the Nat Geo Network, and when they decided that they needed to spend more time with their families, we were very happy to be picked up by the Esquire Network.
Months ago, maybe even a year ago, I saw you call out on Twitter for suggestions for new episodes. Did any of the ideas for the new season come from those responses?
Most of the responses were already on our list of 100 episode ideas, but we did notice that a lot of people wanted to know how to make toast and how to take a nap. And so those are two of the episodes for the new season.
Why do you think people wanted to know how to make toast?
Because toast is kind of tricky, you know? Toast can burn easily. Toast can get too dry. It's not clear what type of bread you should use. There's a lot of cheap toasters on the market. It turns out that all the good toasters were made about 50, 60, 100 years ago, before the threat of lawsuits and OSHA standards, I guess, meant that toasters could be very kind of dangerous, but also very effective.
Sure.
At toasting. You know, it's like so many of the other topics that we cover. Once you look into it, there's actually a lot to learn and a lot that could go wrong if you do it incorrectly. Kind of the point of that episode is I'm not actually really a fan of toast.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like my mom's toast growing up was always a bit too dry and crunchy, although at one point I met with Dave Arnold, who's a famous chef and food experimentalist, and he explained the genius of my mom's toast because, as he put it, you have to consider the toast's application in the food context.
Right.
So although it might have been dry for breakfast toast when it was used to make BLTs with incredibly wet and juicy tomatoes, the dryness of the toast actually led to some absorbent qualities that actually were very well considered on the part of my mom. So I kind of came out of that episode with a renewed appreciation of toast.
You often have a personal element you can bring to the educational process of the episode. For instance, the first episode of the season, which I did get to watch, and it's online, actually, anybody can watch it,
mm-hmm.
at tv.esquire.com, How to Pet a Dog. You have a personal investment in that you were attacked by a dog when you were younger. You've been scared of them, stayed away from them ever since. Does that personal aspect help you make the show?
I'm not sure it was a dog attack. I was definitely psychologically defeated by a dog.
Okay.
The memory is fuzzy to me. I can't remember if the dog actually made physical... All I remember is there was a big black dog facing me down in the street, and then at some point I was lying on the sidewalk feeling very small and very weak.
Okay.
But all that to say, I've always been kind of skittish around dogs, or very kind of a little bit uncomfortable around dogs, nervous around dogs. And the episode actually did kind of put me at ease a little, and made me realize that you don't have to engage with a dog. It's not like shaking someone's hand. It's not like the dog is can consider you rude if you don't immediately approach it and engage it. And it's best to just follow the dog's lead, which for me was kind of a relief. Like, all right, if the dog's not interested in me, I don't have to pretend to be interested in the dog. Live and let live.
Was it scary to make that episode, though, to face down that fear?
You know, I was a little bit nervous about it. I was kind of excited to get attacked by the police, that German Shepherd that jumps on me when I'm wearing the dog protection suit.
Right.
Well, the first time was really fun, which they told me it would be fun, and then the second time was not fun. It was actually kind of scary because the dog was actually kind of dragging me across the ground.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of like those extreme experiences because they are very useful. It's you know, because you're getting a taste of what's the worst that could happen? This. All right, get that over with. And then it's a little easier to convince yourself that no worse thing would happen. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. It does. Can you remind me what that therapy was called to have the dog attack you?
Well, I just called it dog bite immersion therapy,
right.
But I think I just
made that up.
And I would not recommend asking a licensed therapist to prescribe it for you because I have a feeling it's not an actual therapy.
So did you do in the episode after you show the second time and you're hurt, you have bruises on your arms, it looked like.
Mm-hmm.
What happened? Did the suit malfunction or did the dog just...
The second attack, the dog, I think, was tired of messing around. And it really, there was a very distinct moment when all of a sudden I felt like the teeth had gone through the suit. It clamped down even harder, which I think it is trained to do. I think that's part of... You know, it's hard not to take it personally and assume that the dog hates you. The dog is just doing what it's been trained to do, which is kind of where dogs came from. We bred wolves to be companions and to be good, you know, assistants to us. And so this was a well-trained police dog trained by professionals. And the dog knows that if the target is still squirming and trying to get away, the dog just increases the force of its jaw, and it definitely did that to me, and I kind of still just have a little bruise on the inside of my arm.
Still?
Yes. Which is why I'm filing the world's first man-on-dog lawsuit.
You just said the dog didn't do anything wrong, and that's on tape, so you have no case.
Oh, I guess that's true. Dang it.
Sorry.
That's what happens when you hire a dog for a lawyer to sue a dog.
Do you absorb what you learn as you make the show? Is making Going Deep with David Reese changing the way you do things?
Yeah, some episodes have definitely changed the way I do things. Like the first season, I definitely feel more comfortable opening an unknown door because I have a better sense of which door to pull on or push on without looking like an idiot.
I think about that all the time, too. Look for the hinges.
Yep. I definitely tie my shoes more efficiently now that I know the so-called Ian knot that was taught to me by Professor Shoelace, Ian Fegan from Australia. In this season, I have a new appreciation for using natural sponges for washing dishes rather than synthetic sponges because natural sponges are less likely to hold on to bacteria and mold and all those things. So yeah, on a case-by-case basis, I can't say that every episode completely changes my life. I mean, but yeah, you know, I developed a new signature for how to sign your name because I was tired of my clumsy signature. So yeah, some episodes have more impact on me than others. But certainly within each episode, there's always one or two moments when we're shooting it or in a production where I'm just completely gobsmacked or ecstatic about something I've learned or just an interaction that I've had with one of the guests, which is why making the show is really fun and rewarding for me.
I think that's part of what makes it rewarding to watch as well, is you're hanging out and you absolutely don't attempt to and maybe couldn't mask the fact that you are astounded by what you're learning in that moment.
Well, that's the spirit of the show, really, is that the world, there's a lot of incredibly interesting stuff just under the surface of everyday practices and everyday objects if we just take the time to look. And if you meet the right people and talk to the right experts and enthusiasts, they are going to blow your mind because the world is full of mind-blowing information, which is, for us, what makes the show exciting. You know, it's like, what is there to learn about bouncing a ball? And then all of a sudden you're talking to an astrophysicist about the curvature of space-time. It's like, whoa, this is crazy.
Tell me about how your analog social media tour went. Why did you have the idea for it, and how did it go?
The analog social media tour was driving across the country, putting up flyers and talking to undecided viewers and handing out bumper stickers and other paraphernalia. And it was really fun. The network had asked us what our social media strategy was going to be, and I just thought, you know, I had visions of just sitting around, you know, on Twitter hoping people would retweet my tweets, and I thought, I'd rather just go out and do social media the way we used to back in the day, just go out and put up flyers. You know, and I had worked for the census in 2010, knocking on doors, and I had canvassed for Obama in 2008, knocking on doors, so I kind of know what that's like. which is to say vaguely terrifying, but also incredibly rewarding. You know, we met people who obviously had never heard of us. I mean, I don't think actually anybody had heard of us or our show. But when we explained what the show was about, they would say, oh, that sounds interesting. And then when we explained that we were doing social media the old-fashioned way, person to person, they would say, that sounds like a lot of fun. And then a lot of times they would volunteer to put up some flyers in their neighborhood, or if we asked if they would put up some flyers, they'd say, sure, I'll do that. So it was really nice. It was very, you know, it was kind of in the spirit of our show. It was low budget. It was person to person. It was kind of done on a shoestring and made up as we went along. But that's kind of how we do it on Going Deep.
I saw you just before you were leaving. You were at an event at Mass Mocha in North Adams, Massachusetts, and you were a little bit trepidatious, a little bit worried about how it was all going to go, but it went well.
Yeah, I mean, that was the thing. The nice thing about it is we don't really have a metric to know whether it succeeded or failed.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Unlike Facebook, when you can see how many likes your post gets, or unlike Twitter, when you see how many retweets you get. When you're out just driving across the country talking to people who own laundromats or record stores or coffee shops, or are calling the number at the bottom of the flyer because they saw it stapled to a telephone pole in some random city, you can't really quantify it that much, and so you just have to focus on having a nice interaction with somebody and really trying to convince them to watch the show. So I guess we'll find out if the show is a success. We'll know that the good people of Cincinnati and Amarillo really stepped up. but I don't have to waste time feeling obsessed about how many impressions did this flyer on this telephone pole get, because there's no way to measure it. So it's one less thing to worry about, which is great.
Did you get a lot of calls at the Going Deep hotline?
Yeah, we bought a burner phone that we brought on the trip with us, and we had the bottom of the flyer has those little tear-off tabs, like a roofing contractor or something like that.
Right, guitar lessons.
Yeah, exactly. And once the flyers started getting up, we started getting calls from the cities we had been through, where the flyer got passed around online. We got calls from people who saw it on the internet or whatever. Like, it actually worked. It was very exciting. Our little crazy plan actually worked.
Season 2 of Going Deep with David Reese premieres on the Esquire Network on Wednesday at 10 p.m. The first episode is How to Pet a Dog.
I built a damn dog. His name is Dingo D. Dogglesworth, and he is amazing. I used him to practice petting techniques until I realized, actually, I still don't really know how to pet a dog. So I brought him in to meet my favorite dog scientist.
What breed is it?
It's paper mache.
Ah, it's got all the parts, except
for the sex organs.
Right. Well, I just assumed he was fixed. But.
Oh, yeah. And he is, because I'm a responsible pet owner. Have your pet spayed or neutered, right? Bob Barker, Price is Right. Respect.
Thank you, as always, for joining us on the roundtable today.
Thank you, as always. I always like coming on the roundtable.
Good to talk to you, David. Thanks so much. To learn more about Going Deep with David Reese and to watch the first episode online, visit tv.esquire.com. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.